So the goalkeeper might be saying, next cross, next cross, next pass you might receive, next catch, next cross, control. All the time they're talking to themselves in a very positive what they're going to do next rather than don't drop the next cross, don't make another mistake. Because the human brain, Alex, doesn't understand that word don't. If you say don't catch a cross, all you hear the brain is saying, drop the ball, drop the ball, drop the ball, don't make a mistake. So they might be saying, they speak to themselves in a very clever and powerful and positive way, which is catch the next ball, catch the next ball, feet position, watch the ball, watch the ball. They have a simple set of routines they go through time and time and time again.
Hello guys, and welcome back to a new episode of the Gloves On podcast. We're your host, Marcus Sundin, and alongside me is Alexander Brams, as always. Today, we're not joined by a goalkeeper or a goalkeeper coach, but we're joined by a sports psychology consultant, Michael Caulfield. Welcome to the podcast.
It's good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure to have you on, because even though you're not a goalkeeper coach or a goalkeeper, we wanted to talk with you because we here on the podcast really enjoyed talking about the psychology aspect of being a athlete, but more importantly, being a goalkeeper. But before we jump into all the nerdy stuff and stuff like that, can you talk us a little bit about what you currently are doing? I know that you have your own business, Just Caulfield, where you are a consultant for athletes and human beings out there.
And my primary role and love is working in professional football. I've worked at three clubs in England in the Premier League and Championship, and I'm currently with Brentford Football Club, which has, as you know, very strong ties to Danish football, in that our owner also is involved with FC Midtjylland, as is our sporting director, Rasmus Ankersen, and he's also chairman, I believe, of FC Midtjylland. And we've got some brilliant Danish players currently at Brentford, like Christian Norgaard and Mathias Jensen. So we've got a strong Danish connection. And I've learned, if I can say from the outset, I've learned an awful lot about football and life from my Danish colleagues at Brentford over the past 4 years.
Awesome. So you being a sports psychology consultant at the club, can you talk us a little bit about your daily work with the players and talk us through your weekly routines and how you're included, for example, in a club as Brentford?
Yeah, it's a weekly routine because I go in usually once a week, not daily. I think if I was in every day, and we only have two teams, we have an A team and a B team, we haven't got an academy. I think if I was in all the time, it would lose its appeal for the players and possibly for me also. I think by going in once a week, and before COVID, I used to go to all the home games and some away games, that was enough contact with the players and the staff. And I stress also, Marcus and Alex, that my time is also divided with the staff and coaches, because they have, as you know, in football, a huge effect on the morale and mood of a team. So I divide my time between the players, because some players are very talkative, some are less talkative. Some players want to be left alone sometimes. Some want to converse with you. So my time is spent between both the playing staff and the coaching staff on my weekly visit to the football club.
Okay, so if I understand it correctly, you obviously have meetings with the, as you just mentioned, with the coaches about the players, their mentality, but it can also be up to the individual player to decide himself he wants to talk with you about his current stage and his current struggles mentality-wise, stuff like that.
Yeah, I've worked out in football over the years that you have to let players come to you. It's like catching an animal in the field. If you run after an animal in the field, it will disappear over the horizon. If you show interest in the animal and wait, there's a good chance the animal will come eventually towards you to find out who you are and what you're up to. And I find the best approach in football I've been involved in the UK is not to force yourself upon players. Let them come to you and have a very normal approach. I don't do a classroom-based approach with players and coaches. I think that there's a lot of detail now in football. There's a lot of tactical information in football. And I think players and staff see me as not that. They see me to talk about their emotional state, their well-being, how much they're enjoying their football. And I try and build on all the good things that can happen with a football team. So I let people come towards me, and 99% of my work is one-on-one. I don't tend to do group presentations and meeting presentations, which is very hard in COVID anyway, but I tend to work one-on-one.
Okay, so it's very individual from a squad where you, for example, go to work a lot with one player, and then there is maybe one player that you don't even work with. Something that came to my mind was that, especially nowadays, we know that social media, stuff like that, can influence a soccer player a lot. And one example, unfortunately, is when Ronason for Arsenal, he played a game, he made a mistake, and then right after, he got blown up through social media because people coming at him for a bad performance, stuff like that. With your players now and these modern times, do you think social media affect them more than it would have done 10, maybe 20 years ago? And how do you cope with that as well as a consultant?
I think it affects them more than 1 year ago, let alone 10 years ago, because it was very new. I think Twitter and Instagram has only just had its 10th birthday. So it's really in the last 2 to 3 years that the world of social media has had a huge effect on the well-being of footballers, because footballers, like everyone else, they're not different. They're still, I always use the phrase, they're still living, breathing, emotional human beings. And you mentioned to me at the start of this podcast that you're on LinkedIn and Instagram. So why can't they be on LinkedIn and Twitter and Instagram, or if they so wish? So we're all connected up via the digital world. So they also get their information from the digital world. It's how you help them and educate them into what is good for their career and what is going to harm their career. And if they spend their life, if they judge themselves on the reaction from social media after a win or a loss or a good game or an awful game, that will hurt them. That will break them eventually, because I don't think that's the way in which you should be getting your feedback as a footballer. You should be having a much closer inner circle than that. But you can use social media to be kind, to be decent, to promote campaigns. We have a campaign here in the UK led by Marcus Rashford of Man United. He's changed government policy on child poverty by social media, by his use of social media. So you can use it to educate, you can use it to inspire, but you shouldn't use it to get your feedback as a player, because it'll either be very high or very low, of which both are very dangerous.
Yeah, I could imagine, and I've seen a lot of brutal examples of players getting, like Marcus said, Ronason from Arsenal, he probably got a lot of messages. Probably Alisson got some this week after he made some mistakes, but straight away so many players backed him up. We've also, for example, I have an Instagram page where I have like 7,000 followers, and I get a lot of comments when I post goalkeeper drills. And then I see, oh, good ones, good one, good ones. But then I see a bad one, and then sometimes I focus on that. I could imagine there's some players who's also focusing on these bad comments.
We all do, Alex, because I don't want to get too scientific here, because I'm not a neuroscientist, but I understand the topic. There's a very clever, small, but powerful part of our brain which hangs on to all the things we do wrong. So if you score a hat-trick as a forward and you miss a penalty, you remember the penalty as much as you remember the three goals. You just will. The brain has, it's almost like Google. It can remember every mistake you make, and it's drawn towards the negative bias, as I call it, negative comments. So Alex, you could post 10 drills on Instagram and everyone would go, fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. Then the 11th drill is, that's rubbish. You remember the comments from the 11th drill and forget the ones from the first 10. And that's the part of our brain which keeps us alive and alert, because it's always spotting danger, which used to keep us alive. But in sport, you must be very careful you're not always drawn to your mistakes, because that can chip away at your confidence, particularly as a goalkeeper. Because I was told years ago by the first goalkeeping coach I ever worked with here in the UK in the Premier League, he goes, the further you get back in a football field, so you start off with your forwards, your front two, your front three, they're normally full of energy and confidence, and they can miss two or three chances, score the next chance, and they're a hero. Centre midfield, the midfielders, it gets a little bit more tense, because if they make a mistake and they give the ball away on the halfway line and the opposition counterattack and score, then the mistake is with them. When you get back to your defensive unit, your fullbacks and your centre halves, your back three, your back four, your back five even, if they make a mistake and it definitely leads to a goal, well, then they're under fierce pressure. But the one under the most pressure I was taught was always the goalkeeper, because the pressure mounts as you get further away from the halfway line back to your own goal. And I have realised that the goalkeeper is the one who's not allowed to make a single mistake. Because as a centre-half or a centre-forward or a midfield player, you can make a mistake and recover. But as a goalkeeper, you tend to make a mistake. So Alisson did two misplaced passes virtually all season. They both came last Sunday against Manchester City. And he was absolutely criticised to the end for it, because he made two mistakes. If Fabinho gives the ball away twice, or Firmino gives the ball away twice, or Mo Salah gives the ball away twice, consequence not so great. The goalkeeper gives the ball away twice, two goals. So the pressure mounts as you get towards your own goal.
Exactly. And that's, I saw an interview with Kasper Schmeichel the other day, and people ask him, why goalkeeping, and why play a position where you can't make any mistakes, and how is it being that? And that's that. Yeah, I think every goalkeeper out there who is a goalkeeper, they all loves the pressure. I love the pressure, and he says he thrives from it, and that's why he is so good as he is, and that's why
the great keepers over the years. And I've always been fascinated by goalkeepers. I've worked with many goalkeepers. The very good ones thrive on being the person to make the match-winning save. They love it. They enjoy it. They embrace it. They want to be involved.
Exactly. And I personally,
Peter Schmeichel was the same.
Yeah. They're incredible, those two. And personally, I love the pressure, and I would much rather have a last minute 1v1 save or a penalty save or then scoring the winner. I don't know why. That's probably because I've been in the net for 20 years, but still, it's, to me, it's much more thriving. And let's talk it from a psychology kind of place. How can you, this pressure, this, let's say a game, I have 10 saves and one mistake, and then the coach only talks about that one mistake. How can you get on with that, if you understand what I mean?
You have to train your mind, which they do brilliantly, goalkeepers, with their goalkeeping coaches. They have to train their mind to accept that they will not be perfect every game, because perfectionism is evil and it doesn't exist. So they have to accept now and again that mistakes will happen. And they have to have a routine. I call it a routine. It's a bit like, I always say, it's a bit like flying an aeroplane. A pilot always has the same routine before he flies an aeroplane. And I think goalkeepers must have a routine which they can use after a mistake or after a match-winning save. So they go back to a routine they trust time and time. It's the mental routine. And to catch the next ball, to pass the next ball, because they use their feet so much, obviously. To be in control of you, to catch the next cross. They have a routine they go back to after making a mistake. And that takes a lot of resilience and toughness, because as a goalkeeper, you're constantly being judged. More so, I think, than any other position. If you look at the Premier League here in England this year, you had the keeper, Kepa, at Chelsea, constantly judged. This weekend, you've had Alisson, constantly judged. You've had David De Gea, constantly judged and scrutinised, like no other position. like no other position, because they can get away with the least mistakes, and they have to train their mind to overcome that by a routine and process it. If they make a mistake, they can quickly get back to their match day mode, and that takes practice.
Can you give us a little example for the keepers out there listening of what a mental reset could be?
A mental reset would be if you just conceded a goal. So the club I work for, the keeper conceded a goal, an own goal, in the first 2 minutes on Saturday. The team went on to win the game 4-1. But if you watch his performance after that mistake, it was outstanding. It was quite brilliant. And afterwards he said, I had to fix my own problem. I had to fix it for the team. And then if you see, they often go back and they mark out the penalty area. They might mark out the center of the goal from the 6-yard box. They might walk up to the penalty spot. And it's almost like a physical routine to start their match all over again, rather than dwell on the mistake. So they literally go through their pre-match routine, and the self-talk which they use, Alex, is vital. So the goalkeeper might be saying, next cross, next cross, next pass you might receive, next catch, next cross, control. All the time they're talking to themselves in a very positive what they're going to do next, rather than don't drop the next cross, don't make another mistake. Because the human brain, Alex, doesn't understand that word don't. If you say don't catch a cross, all you hear the brain is saying, drop the ball, drop the ball, drop the ball, don't make a mistake. So they might be saying, they speak to themselves in a very clever and powerful and positive way, which is catch the next ball, catch the next ball, feet position, watch the ball, watch the ball. They have a simple set of routines they go through time and time and time again.
Yeah, and we have talked about self-talk on this podcast before as well, and we even had a mental performance coach in a few weeks ago talking about how to stay focused for 90 minutes, where we came to the conclusion that it's not possible for a goalkeeper to be focused for 90 minutes. And we talked about aspects on how you could then be as focused as possible, where self-talk was one of them. And what comes to my mind as well is, as a goalkeeper, confidence is so important as well. And the attitude that we provide out on the field. The players you work with, let's narrow it down to maybe the goalkeepers you work with, developing confidence as a goalkeeper after making a mistake, as you just mentioned, after 2 minutes, you still have 88 minutes left of the game, right? So coming back from a mistake, staying focused, still having a great attitude, and then also showing that you are confident, even though you know that you just made a mistake. How is that possible to do?
I think what you have to do then, and I've researched this a lot over my years working in sport, Marcus, is you have to just try and get the next thing you do right. The brain's a very complex piece of machinery. If you set it impossible targets and impossible goals and you don't achieve them, you can let yourself down and be disappointed in yourself very quickly. So when you make a mistake in anything, I always think the best thing you can do is to try and do the next simple thing really well. Now that could be the next moment the ball comes in your area, you simply want to pass to a teammate or clear it to the halfway line. If you just then set yourself one simple target, not I've got to have, so if you let a goal in after 1 minute, if you say to yourself, I've got to be the greatest goalkeeper of all time for 89 minutes, that's a really big ask. If you say to yourself, can I catch the next cross? Can I make the next clearance? Can I help the defense organize zonally at the next set play? The brain will go, yeah, you can do that. And then you do it. And the confidence is slowly then restored. But if you say, I've now got to be brilliant for the rest of the game, that can confuse the mind. So do one simple thing really well quickly, and that will get you back on course. That applies to all sports, Marcus, not just goalkeeping.
Yeah, it's very interesting because we have had former guests, Conor O'Keefe, for example, mentioning that the most important thing for him was when he got on the pitch, was to his first action, even though it was a simple pass to a defender, was to just focus on making that perfect pass, even though it was a simple pass, to develop and increase his confidence during the game. So we get in this zone and this mindset of that we're good enough, that we can perform. And it made me think of that this weekend as well. Arsenal's new goalkeeper, Matt Ryan, he got his debut. And the first thing I saw out there on the internet was that his first touch was picking the ball out of the net for Arsenal, right? He didn't even touch the ball before he conceded the goal. Mm-hmm. And coming back from that must be obviously tough. New goalkeeper, if everyone's eyes are on you, that you need to prove yourself that you are the right signing, stuff like that. And that's where the goalkeeper before him, Ronason, he messed up and he mentally had a tough time. Matthew Ryan came back, and then there has been floating a lot of videos of him communication-wise out on Instagram where he's just so confident, so his attitude is perfect. He communicates with the defense, stuff like that. So that's why I think that attitude, communication, and also confidence, even though you made a mistake, is so important.
Well, the goal wasn't his fault. If I
not at all, not
the,
at all.
The goal was a deflection for a start. So it's not as exactly, if he made a mistake. So then I think watching the game, he went straight back to a routine that he trusts, which was commanding, which was communicating with his defense. So he didn't let the goal, which wasn't his fault, affect him. He didn't go, oh no, this is my whole career depends on this game now against Aston Villa. He went back to a very simple set of routines. And as yourselves, gentlemen, you do that every day you train. It becomes automatic. It's almost like an automatic car where it just changes gear automatically, because otherwise you will allow that mistake to affect the rest of your performance. And then you get feedback from, so look at Alisson at the weekend for Liverpool. I'm sure that he's been reminded by lots of people in Liverpool that he's actually been Liverpool's, for the last 3 years, he's been one of the main reasons they've won the Premier League and the Champions League. So one game with two mistakes doesn't suddenly make him a nervous goalkeeper. It was one game with two mistakes. That was it. He's probably done that before, but the opposition didn't score.
Yeah,
you have to have a routine you go back to. You must trust your routine every single time.
Yeah, so the routine is, I do my routine, and that's when the game starts, halftime, and then after each goal, even if I concede or we score, I go back, I reset, I have these little self-talk cues, and then also if I lose my focus during the game, I try to get my mental reset back and be in it and keep myself moving. Yeah. So I hopefully don't make mistakes, but of course,
mistakes are part of it, though. They happen. It's how you recover, and you use the word there, reset. So I've worked with a lot of goalkeepers, and they just have this pre-match routine. When they walk, a lot of them want to touch the ball for the first time. You see they want to touch the ball now, which is on the plinth, as we call it here, when they walk out and it's standing like a trophy. They want to touch the ball for the first time. They want to get a feel of the ball straight away. It's a routine. And I know that some of them have their little pre-match rituals of how they, before they go onto the pitch, and they're almost like little superstitions, but actually they're just part of their routine. And every time after a goal or after a mistake, a goalkeeper must reset. I think more than any other position on the field, it's about resetting your mental state. And the other thing I will say, as I've noticed in the last 15 years, that of all the players I've seen train in football, the best prepared are goalkeepers, because they practice goalkeeping every single day. They don't train normally with the team until the team has done the boxes and the warm-up and patterns of play. Then there might be a small-sided game or 11v11 or 8v8. The goalkeepers, they start on their own, they work with the goalkeeping coaches, and they're doing their touches and their one-touch and their two-touch, and they're doing their drills every single day. They are the best-prepared footballers in a football team.
Interesting. Really interesting to hear. And while we're kind of in this topic of mistakes, I want to talk about the Brentford Fulham game last year, and then also have a comparison to my own. So I was playing in kind of a game like they did, where if they win, they win, they go up to the Premier League. My game, it was the national championship final in US. And after 10 minutes, I make a mistake and cost a goal. I feel like I was quickly to reset. And we went on to lose, unfortunately. But I thought I was quickly to reset, and I was in the game after. And then talking about Brentford Fulham, it was a direct free kick that Reyes, kind of his fault, people say. Also, it was a very good shot. But talking about the mistake in game, quickly to reset. But what about after the game, in the following weeks? What are some tips to recover from that? I feel like I was quickly to recover, but I still now, and it's 14 months ago, I still sometimes think about it.
I think you'll always think about it, but I think if you go over it over and over and over and over and over again, it was a freak goal in many ways. You must also say it was a clever goal by the opposition, because they worked out that our defence was quite high and there might be a chance. But it was a freak goal in many ways. If you then just beat yourself up over and over again for a goal like that, it can affect you forever. And I think what happened with this team is that it wasn't discussed over and over and over again. I don't think it will happen again, because the team learned from it, but there's no need. I always say that if you have a video, if you drive your car and it's a bit icy and you slide it into the side of the road, or in, not crash it, you just slide it on the ice into another car and you break the headlights, and it's caught on camera, you wouldn't come back in the evening and watch it over and over and over and over again. You wouldn't want to drive your car ever again. You learn from it, because you might have pressed the brakes too hard or too late or too early, and you might have panicked a wee bit, but you learn from it. But you don't come home in the evening and go, come on, we'll put that video on of me sliding into the rails again. You learn from it, you watch it, and then you prepare for the next one. And if you just keep discussing it, all it does is evoke bad memories, and you don't want too many bad memories. You want to learn from it and then practice so that to ensure that you hope that sort of a thing does not happen again. But discussing it at length is pointless. It's just it's doing then is leaving. Literally, it's like having a hard drive in your mind of all the mistakes you made.
Yeah, and
it's like a downhill skier. I'm sure when a downhill skier, and I've known one or two downhill skiers, when they have a fall, they watch it, they learn from it. They don't sit there every day watching the video of them crashing at 90 miles an hour.
I feel like that's really good examples, and I haven't seen the video from the game, but of course it's run through my mind. But luckily, I read some sports psychology and talked to a couple of ones before the game, and also I feel like I was quick to recover. And something that I learned that I said to my players all the time, to my teammates, is that you can't change what has already happened. Let's go on, carry on, and leave it behind us, because you can't change what's already happened.
No, it's a bit like if I make a mistake on this podcast, which is highly likely, if all I remember from this podcast is the one time I made a slight error or I spoke too quickly, I'd be a nervous wreck. As would you. And I think we mustn't get too hung up on mistakes in life, because mistakes are part of life.
Yeah, and talking about, especially in goalkeeping. Also regarding that you need to perform all the time. An example is just this podcast as well. I'm sure Alexander can confirm as well, but just making an intro for this podcast, even though we have done it 30 times now, we still get a little sweat going, because we know it's getting recorded. We know that people out there listen to it, and Alexander and I, first language isn't English, stuff like that. So we get a sweat going, we get red in our head, we get a bit nervous, but then when we get going, I feel like it's developing into that. As mentioned before, we develop confidence, we develop our attitude as well, and it just from there we increase and get better as well. But Michael, on this podcast, we obviously have an agenda, and you know, it's a goalkeeping podcast, so our name is Gloves On. We love talking about gloves, but we don't think that you have as much knowledge or just interest maybe within gloves. So we wanted to talk about your favorite stuff, because usually we talk about favorite gloves, right, for the goalkeepers and goalkeeper coaches out there. But we want to talk about maybe the players you've worked with or you've seen on TV. It could be every sports, but your favorite athlete when you think about mindset and recovering from mistakes. You mentioned that we all make mistakes, but can you talk us through some athletes out there, or maybe just one that you have seen that you are impressed about or you've worked with?
In my lifetime, and it's longer than yours, my life, I think we've lived through an era of some incredible sporting performances in the last 10 to 15 years. But if I can change sports for one moment, I've never seen a performer as elegant, but as powerful and as determined and skillful and as brilliant as Roger Federer in tennis. I think his mindset, the way in which he conducts himself on the court, off the court, and bear in mind, when he was 18, growing up in Switzerland, he was very hard to handle. He was very emotional. Now, I know he's been up against Nadal, who is different, and Djokovic, who is an animal on the tennis court. But I think in my lifetime, if I can mention one worldwide sports star, it's Roger Federer for his mindset as well as his skill. And he's now 39, and he's still trying to play tennis next year after knee surgery. So I think it would be Roger Federer in terms of how his career in tennis is simply nothing short of remarkable, including his mindset, because his emotional control on the tennis court is remarkable. And he knows how to win, but when he doesn't win, and he doesn't want everything all the time, his reaction to defeat, I think, is a key to all athlete. He praises the winner. He says the winner deserved it and he played well. I would now go away and work on my game and try and come back stronger next time. He doesn't get too up and he doesn't get too down. And I think we've, in tennis, with Federer, Nadal, Djokovic and Andy Murray, we've had this golden era of four of the greatest players of all time in a very individual sport where mistakes happen. So I think if you can borrow the mindset, and I'm fascinated by Roger Federer, if you can borrow the mindset of Roger Federer, it is remarkable, truly remarkable. In football, I'm still watching Cristiano Ronaldo into his 37th year now. He's past his 36th birthday, still perform at the highest level with the fitness of an 18-year-old, which is nothing short of remarkable either. But so in football, watching Ronaldo still play at the highest level is fantastic. But to answer your question, it would be Roger Federer for his mindset and his absolute love of playing tennis still. He loves still playing tennis and hitting a tennis ball.
Well said, Michael. And what a way to end the podcast episode. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on, Michael. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
And to the listeners out there, please leave a review. I know we have asked a few times now, but it's the only way that we can optimize the podcast, because we want to provide the best possible episodes for you out there. Make sure to follow Alexandra, Danish Goalkeeper, myself, Goalkeeper Dane, and of course, the Gloves On podcast. Talk to you soon.